Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Meet and Three is back. We're kicking off our fourth season and celebrating HRN's 10th anniversary with a very special episode about our home, Brooklyn.
Roberta's was such an interesting place with such a strong gravitational pull. It attracted all these different groups.
The neighborhood has changed a lot over the past decade, from its culinary renaissance to the complicated implications of gentrification.
I would say the majority of the people who are members of our co-op definitely have a certain purchasing power, are mostly white, and we are trying to change that.
We're taking you on a journey that spans the birthplace of food radio to buzzy neighborhood pollinators to the transformative health journey of our borough president.
That was my moment of, you know, wow, someone has thrown me a life raft and I'm going to take it.
Subscribe to Meet and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning for the final little and go. This is Emily Pearson. I am your co-host of the Main Course OG. I'm in studio this morning on Thursday, May 23rd with Patrick Martins.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. And Brandon Hoy.
Am I supposed to say thanks?
No. Good morning. Nice to see you. You look so pretty.
Let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. Our guests for the Weekly Grill today are Chef Lena Ciardullo, did I get that right?
Nailed it.
Great. Of Marta Cafe Marchio and Vini e Fritti in Manhattan, part of Union Square Hospitality Group and a great friend and customer of ours. And we also have Chef Al DiMelio of Burano and the just opened Spirit Animal, a new wine shop that we're going to talk about a little later.
Mamma mia, pizzeria. Both of those are pizzerias.
They are. Wood-fired as well. So Al is coming by way of Staten Island this morning in 2 hours of traffic.
Yeah, 2 hours of fun.
Is that your daily routine?
Pretty much. Well, usually I leave at 10, so it's like 45 minutes, but the crack of dawn at 10 o'clock is kind of...
Now, do you listen to 1010? Do you get your traffic report from the radio, or do you just look on your phone while you're driving?
Oh, it's Waze. Waze. Waze and silence.
You're not old school like Patrick, where you tune in to 10-8, you find the AM station.
Traffic on the?
On the ones.
Which is also the 10.
I'm a traffic on the 15, which is ESPN radio. It's 45, 15, 30.
I thought you were gut.
Gut?
Just your gut. You're like...
Oh, yeah. A gut traffic guy.
Yeah, you're just like, my gut tells me the Lincoln Tunnel is the place to be right now.
50% of the time I'm on gut. But when you do a commute so frequently, does Waze, you're never really going to come up with a better route when you're trying to get from Staten Island to South Williamsburg, are you? Or
no.
Do you take the streets?
I give up. There's no beating the traffic.
Can you take streets?
Oh, yeah.
Once you get over the BQE, right, you can get off on...
No, once you get over the bridge.
Bridge, I mean, yeah.
Or you take 3rd Avenue, 4th Avenue, you go... It's a disaster. Mm-hmm. I need a helicopter.
This is why people shouldn't drive.
Well, we were just saying Robert Moses was insulted for trying to change everything into a highway. You know, people had to fight him and stop him, Jane Jacobs and stuff. But even the highways that he successfully made were so short-sighted because 50 years later... They were woefully underperforming for the amount of vehicles there were. So even in his world, he failed. So he failed twice. Two strikes.
I don't know that he saw Uber and Lyft coming. I'll give him that.
No, well, actually, Uber, well, cabs, trucks, you know, and then the BQE at one point gets down to two lanes. It's just not enough for the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens and Staten Island, all that.
All right, we won't relive your morning commute for you anymore, Al, but you made it, you're here, and we won't put you back into too much traffic yet. We also have calling in our regular panelist and publisher of the Alameda Sun, Eric Koss. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning. Hello. You sound so pretty this morning.
Oh, thank you.
You should say
thank you.
Oh.
Eric, how was your drive?
Totally uneventful. I stopped and got my coffee at my favorite coffee shop, and not a car in sight. I mean, I had to avoid a garbage truck, I think. It is 7 a.m. out here.
I was going to say, we didn't hear the birds chirping this morning, so I knew you were not just lounging on your front patio, or your lanai, as maybe you call it.
Exactly.
Oh, sure, yeah. Go ahead and imagine that.
All right. Well, we finally have good weather here in New York. We had an amazing weekend here this past weekend, and Memorial Day is upon us, so I think I'm allowed to say summer is here, although usually Memorial Day is shit. And
you were wearing white yesterday.
I did.
I thought, aren't you supposed to wait till after Memorial Day and never past Labor Day?
I overheard you whispering about my white pants, yes.
Patrick, how do you know the rules of when to wear white?
I come from a cloud.
Look at you.
Did a moth just fly out of my shirt?
That must be your winter collection.
Patrick is a big fan of Anna Wintour, just so you know.
I was just going to mention that my folks live down the shore, and whenever Memorial Day hits, I mean, it's like clockwork. All of a sudden, everybody's down the shore. It's like summer, somebody turns on a switch, and then summer is on. Down the shore.
Well, you know that better than anyone. When you live in a seasonal climate, as soon as you have a chance to sit outside at, Burano, or I'm sure everyone at Marta is asking you, can you create some outdoor seating for us or open the windows? Like, we all crave that. So we're going to jump into our...
Oh, yeah, I actually see. It's for me to start the round robin.
Yeah.
No, you assign this to me. Everyone's life in this room is wrapped up in Italian traditions. We have three pizza makers and a company that sells more than half of its product to Italians, Cure Masters and Chefs. Who are you, and what's your connection to Italy?
Please identify yourself. Lena?
Lena Cerdullo. Executive chef at Marta Vini e Fritti Cafe Marchio. And yeah, connection to Italy is, first of all, I'm half Italian, and I always wished I was more than half. Like, I really, really liked that half a lot. And yeah, my immediate family pretty much sucked at cooking, but my aunts, grandparents, everything else were great. So those were like the holidays you looked forward to, is going over to that side of the family. And I learned to make gnocchi with my Aunt Betty. And I studied my grandfather's recipe books because he was from Chicago. He worked in a sausage factory. My grandmother worked in a bakery. So everybody else in my family had contact with food. And I was being deprived in my super not Italian household.
Dare I ask what the other half is?
Eastern European Jewish. So also great food, and loved that as well. Mm, but just like good. my parents just weren't the ones delivering. Sorry, mom.
Often it skips a generation. It's yes. I think
chefs don't like to relinquish their secrets to the next in line. But when they're about to die, they're like, I'm gonna drag that 7-year-old into the kitchen with me and teach her everything.
Well,
or him.
They tried, my grandfather tried to teach my mom how to make it. She just, either he was holding back or she wasn't a good study, but something didn't work.
Because you're too close in age. A 50-year-old doesn't want to relinquish the kitchen to a 25-year-old, but an 80-year-old will happily have a 16-year-old be the person who knows how to boil the water correctly or whatever. So.
All right. So I'm Al DiMeglio, and basically a lot of Italian. I'm second generation, though, so I guess I'm practically American. But my whole family came from Burano, Ischia. Everybody I tell, what's Ischia? Well, the island next to Capri. Oh, that thing? Okay. But which is why I named my restaurant Burano, to throw it out there. But yeah, growing up, it was a lot of good food, a lot of eating, a lot of hiding the scales, because it's kind of scary because I ate way too much food. But yeah, my grandmother, my father, I was making bread at 2 and all that fun stuff, and always loved pizza. But then I ran away. I kind of ran away from Italian food as soon as I had a shot and went French, and kind of got pulled back. I was working for Le Cirque at the time, and Cirio said, you're going to run my Italian restaurant. This was 2001. And he's like, well, before you do it, you're going to go work in Italy, because the French guys is gonna know Italian food the way I love Italian food, and from there it's been history.
You know what they say, once you go French, you always come back. Right? You guys have heard that, haven't you?
That's
a very widely used phrase out there in the world.
Brandon, do you have Italian roots? Right.
Unless Ancestry.com tells me otherwise, I would say no.
Yes, you do. The only legitimate source of consistent income you've ever generated for yourself is through this restaurant.
This is true.
And it's a pizza place.
This is true.
Italy.
So there's my connection. Thank you for pointing that out.
Your oven.
You're a master.
I'm a genius. Your oven came from Italy by
boat. It did,
boat.
Fusano.
And wasn't it
a very small
at
town?
Sea?
It was. DHL. It was, you know, the Italians. They were holding it for ransom.
Exactly.
They were like, you want your oven? Give us some money. How about you, Eric? We know your better half is Italian.
That's right. My mom is full-blooded Italian, and we just recently were over there kind of like tracing our roots, and so that's definitely my heritage. I'm a lot like Lena. I'm half Italian and half Eastern European mutt, but because my Eastern European side comes from my dad's side, I can't say that I'm Jewish in any way. So, you know, you trace that lineage through the mother's side.
I read this question is different, just like Italy in America. So it's a tiny little country that's not even producing faster than it's dying out. Like, it's not even increasing in population. And yet,
that's what makes it so romantic.
Yes, exactly, because everything is fleeting. Spaghetti and meatballs, mafia movies, pizza, coffee, gelato, biscotti, olive oil, vino.
That's who you
gladiators
are.
Gladiators and gladiator shows.
This is
shows.
All who
this
you
is
are?
America. It's everywhere. That's why Little Italy isn't anything anymore, because they used to have to concentrate in that little area. Now, there's 40 Italian places within a mile of me. No, there's 600 Italian places. Somehow that culture just, I think it's because it's a boot in the Mediterranean. There was all this stuff, but it's everywhere.
It's definitely because it's a boot. I mean, I would give 100% of all of that just basically to the shape of the continent itself.
I hope you're not homeschooling.
I unfortunately am, and who knows where my kids are.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It wouldn't be doing as well if it was shaped like a sandal, probably. But I think it probably has something to do with the Roman Empire, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely.
So does so does pork roll, right? Today
we were talking about the Roman Empire before.
Yeah. What, in regards to lamb before? Is that what was that?
No, we were talking about not what were we talking about?
We were talking about what's the oldest business that's been handed down, and we were wondering if it could trace as far back as the Roman Empire, but we think that medieval times fucked us.
Yeah.
The like, place in New Jersey, medieval times?
Yes.
That place is fucking everybody, let me tell you. Go there and see how hard you get fucked.
I desperately do want to go there. That's my 40th birthday dream.
It's eating the chicken with your hands that really sets it apart.
I
that's
know.
A turkey. Yeah. That's a turkey drum, actually, that they're it famous is, for. They buy a lot of turkey drums.
They also have them in Disney World. I can't quite figure out why that's something you want to eat at a theme park.
It's poultry's largest representative.
Physically, yeah, I guess it must be. Okay, so today is National Pork Roll Day. For some of you in the room, Al, you're from, Staten Island, not New Jersey. Yeah. Forgive me, but, you know, I guess there's
I'll call it a porchetta sandwich.
Oh,
well,
see,
I'm from New York, not Jersey, so.
Okay, so, well, let's talk about that. So, Eric, you're originally from New Jersey, so you actually...
I am.
He sent us this little alert that today is National Pork Roll Day, and pork roll is a woefully misunderstood food, typically outside of New Jersey. Eric, I know when you go back to visit your family, they always make a point to have it. Tell us, pork roll... I mean, already it seems misunderstood since Al just called it a porchetta sandwich, which sounds way more elevated. I know my husband loves it. It's Taylor Ham is the brand name.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the classic brand. And I guess you can order it online. But sort of my problem with this is calling it National Pork Roll Day when I don't know. It's got to be like 90% of the nation isn't even like exposed to pork roll on a daily basis.
That's like calling the baseball... a World Series.
Yeah, there you go. When we don't play it in every country. Yeah, it's kind of strange. But I don't know. My brother and I find it delicious, and it's like part of a breakfast tradition going back now, you know, 50-plus years or something for us. So it's also like fed to the kids at schools. Like when I was a kid, that was like, you know, the breakfast you could get if you needed assistance.
What's a good pork roll? What makes a good one, and what's the first thing that people screw up to make a bad one?
I don't think anybody makes it.
No,
I mean,
no,
that's the thing.
There's only one way to make it, which is bad, right?
Taylor Ham is where it's at.
So, yeah, I mean, Taylor Ham is the brand that makes it, and maybe there's like one or two other competitors, but it's not something that people are making the way you make charcuterie in small batches for your restaurant. I mean, we were talking to Mark Ladner. He was dying to make a high-end boutique heritage pork roll, but there's something about, I think, the...
Yeah, but like you also... The luxury is kind of like the throwback, you know? And the only way that you screw it up is like not cutting it right or like not, you got to clip the sides so it doesn't curl because you don't want the Roni cup effect on this. You want the crispy effect. So you got to like.
Is that why people score it?
Yeah. Well, you like snip the edges so that the outside doesn't make it curl up and then like. You get it on the grill, you press it, so you get some nice char on it.
Now, you're from Illinois originally. Where
you don't
is
want
this
the pepperoni
Jersey
juice.
Knowledge
You don't want
from?
The pepperoni juice. You don't want it to, like, form that, like, juicy cup.
No, no Roni cups for the pork roll. Not the way.
Who has taught you the ways of the pork roll?
So my husband is from New Jersey. We're going to be down the shore this weekend for Memorial Day with everyone else.
She is
in New
proving
Jersey.
Every fact that has been stated.
I know. This
Jersey,
is,
going
You're
down
a great
to the
guest. You want to be a regular panelist? I mean, certainly there's not going to be a National Pork Roll Day that you're not the guest on.
Thank
I mean,
you.
We will not
let
one go by.
Okay, so there are there
just
other...
For our listeners, real quick, you can check out the Asbury Park Press. They have a whole list of ways to celebrate National Pork Roll Day in case you're looking for something to do.
Well, if there's...
I mean, obviously, it's like Bruce Springsteen at Asbury Park, right? There's like really only one way to do this.
Well, this question also asks, are there other misunderstood, inimitable foods from your upbringing? And there's one thing that's on a roll.
Good question.
The New York City hot dog, which I think we do have this water. You know, we're on a roll. That's Sabourette's tagline. We're on a roll. But
the sampler's not working today. There would have been a ba-dum-bum.
Okay. No, there would have been a wah-wah.
So listen, things that we do in New York. I mean, I came up with this like while driving. I wrote this down. Kaiser roll with butter, bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll, bagel, pizza. Middle Eastern food is so prolific here. There's like a million versions of it. Obviously, all the ethnic foods. And because of the taxi and the subway, two things where you could just hail a cab and the subway. So New York, street food. Which, you know, the hot dog's like the best example for. It's still delicious. The Sabourette one, the Gray's Papaya one is like one of the best hot dogs in the world. Nathan's is delicious. You know, we have hot dogs.
I would say the water dog is misunderstood because it sounds yucky.
I'm not into a water dog.
No?
I'm gonna get controversial here.
I thought you supported biodiversity. There's like 25,000 things in that thing.
Dirty water dog.
I prefer a grill. Like, put some char on my dog.
All right, fair enough.
Nathan's?
I would second that, too. I'm a fan of grill. I mean, that's like the good old American way, like on the grill.
We're
the
not dirty good old Americans.
I know, but
in
the
New
dirty
York City.
The dirty water dog is kind of gross. It's like you see the water and it just you're just like,
you just have to
looks
think
like
past
urine.
It.
Who did the marketing on that? Dirty water dog? Woof.
Woof.
Woof, literally. Well,
throw one insult to injury on here. My father used to make hot dogs, and after he's done making the hot dogs, he would take mozzarella and melt it inside the dirty water, and then put that on his hot dog.
Oh,
oh
my
no.
God,
yeah, that's yucky. I don't like the sound of that.
Is he still with us?
No, that's what killed him. No. But it's a fun one.
I mean, he really embraced his Americanization over there.
That I guess that's Italian American, huh? We'll call it that for now.
Yeah, for sure. So what do you guys think as chefs? Does school mean anything anymore? The culinary world is unique in that many chefs have achieved great success having never gone to trade school. What path do you recommend to young chefs? Is school a requirement? Did you guys go to culinary school?
I did. I did go to New York restaurant school. I don't know what it is anymore. But I would suggest pack your bags, go to where you want to work, know the cuisine, and work for free. I mean, paying $40,000 or $80,000, what everybody's paying now, you're not going to make that. Well, I don't know. Now, most cooks are making $800 a week as an average, which broke my ass to get there. But pack your bags, work for free, really work under some of the best chefs and really understand the food. Most of the times, they'll come out of a school and be like, I'm ready to take your job. No, you're not. You can't even peel a fucking potato. And it's that kind of... I don't know. If I were to do it again, I wouldn't have went to school. I would have packed my shit and left.
Can you work for free outside of Europe?
No, not anymore. I mean, New York, you can't because labor laws. But
yeah,
I also went to culinary school, and both my parents are teachers. I went to undergraduate, and then I went to culinary school like a real dumbass. and
but maybe like the smartest dumbass there is.
Yeah, I was definitely, I'm going to toot my own horn here. I was the valedictorian at CIA because I was the only person who like knew how school worked. You know?
Future class mother. It's a snow day, everybody.
Please, God, no. But in any case, it's good because it's holding your hand. But like, basically, do you want to spend $60,000 to have someone hold your hand? If that's the only way you can learn, school's not a bad thing. It's going to help someone learn for sure. It's going to hold their hand. It's going to teach them all the stuff. But if you are independent and if you can source an employer who wants to teach you, some employers don't give a shit about teaching you. You got to source an employer who wants to actually engage and grow you. And if you can do that, then save your money.
That actually makes me feel good because I only paid him $50,000 to hold my hand. So, but I do want to say Elon Musk said this, don't confuse schooling with education. I didn't go to Harvard, but the people that work for me did, which I kind of like. And also $70,000, fuck that. That is being misspent. I guarantee you that you don't need $70,000 to send your kid to Vassar. I mean, that is upsetting. So fuck it. I think school is less important now. You, interestingly, Emily, said it was more important. I think it's a lot less now.
I think it really depends on the person. I think there's some people who need to be thrown to the wolves and they need to learn life by life itself. And some people, they need their hand held and they need to see things before they experience them on their own. And I think that that's just an individualized thing. And I think the faster you get to that point where you're like, what do I need? That's where really it happens. How fast can you get to that?
Also, there's like, I don't read a cookbook and get it particularly inspired. Like, I get inspired from hearing someone talk to me about something. I get inspired from personal engagement. You're going to get that through school. You're not going to get that from just opening up a book. Like, if I just opened a book without having the knowledge base that I have from going to school, I don't know that I would have actually gotten anything out of it. Now cookbooks are like graduate school. I can read them because I already have the foundation. But right. Maybe you need, I was someone who definitely like did well because I had someone having a conversation with me, engaging with me to give me the foundation.
And when I made that comment yesterday about that school matters, I think it's on paper, especially I was talking about a little bit outside of the culinary world, on paper, people aren't going to really look at you if you don't have certain credentials. Well,
if you weren't the coxswain on the crew team.
So you were
Barbara.
Talking about Lori Loughlin yesterday is where this conversation
Felicity
was going.
Felicity Huffman, which, by the way, is not bad. To put Felicity Huffman in the same boat as Lori Loughlin, you cannot. She made a mistake. She apologized. She wants to pay. She wants to change the world. Felicity Huffman. Lori Loughlin is going, she's going to be pulled out of the jail by her tooth, you know? I mean, she is fighting everything. She hasn't admitted anything. She paid millions of dollars to anybody to lie about their daughter.
She has two kids, right? She had to pay for
and they're not her kids, are they? They're Massimo's kids, I believe, right? Am I wrong?
Stamos. Isn't she married to John Stamos?
On Full House.
Please tell me that show is real.
John Stamos is married to the girl from, what's her name?
Rebecca Romaine.
Still married?
I don't know.
She's like, when last I read People Magazine, they were still married.
In 2011.
They may have gotten divorced since then.
But there were pictures in The Inquirer.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, it's real.
Hey, what about in journalism, Eric? If someone's like, I just learned to write and follow storyline by gut and effort, are you just like, dude, go to school?
No, I mean, if you can get the job done, I think employers and people are looking for is like a real world application of whatever the skills you've learned are. You know, like if you're, I don't know, I hear so many people saying that they're not working in the field that they went to school for, or that they don't actually use those skills on a regular basis. And I think if you didn't find like a real world application for that education, then it does seem like it went to waste, you know what I mean? But I think there's a certain amount of like underlying stuff that you get from school that, you know, teaches you some level of discipline or not. Some people come, you know, just don't
don't follow the rules at all.
Do you think that someone who doesn't go to school is less likely to be valuable to you?
To some degree, because, I mean, if they don't have that underlying foundation of, like, good written English, and I'm not even sure I said that properly, but, you know.
Dummy. you missed a few days.
They got some kind of underlying grammar, that kind of thing. Okay. Sorry.
No, that makes sense.
I think these days everybody has a blog or a social media platform, or there's a lot more ways to get your foot in the door. And like Lena said, and I do think this is really true in kitchens, if you want to learn and you're in an environment where there are so many sous chefs, executive chefs who will teach you and will teach you from scratch, if you just have the desire to show up every day and be professional and learn and focus. And like at this point, I think in the hiring pool, at least in New York City, you're looking for that more than for someone that came out of culinary school.
Totally. But like, it's worth noting that school also falls mostly for a certain age group, and like hiring a 18-year-old that has never worked before, school could be an opportunity for discipline as much as it can be an opportunity for education. And like that discipline is needed in a professional setting as well. So school can teach you life lessons beyond just like the curriculum.
But you know, there is an interesting thing, the trick thing that you can't always get. I just read an article in the Times about bravado ends up convincing people that they actually know, but it's just bravado. And that actually rich people, it was the article, you know, have more bravado, and they, so you believe them more, even though they might have less on the resume and even be performing less, but they have bravado. So it's a performance thing too.
I was going to say, is that even called bullshit sometimes?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Like my first hire, which is a good friend of mine, he's also the GM of Emily right now, speaking of pizza. My first hire, he's like, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this. He didn't do shit. He like walked on and sold me, exactly like you're saying. But he became a really good friend of mine, and now he's running restaurants. So.
You're like, you're full of shit, but I like you.
I liked him. Yeah.
You're fired, and let's go get a beer.
No, I mean, that's one of the primary tips that people say, like, you know, just say you can do it. And if you can't, you figure out how to do it.
And not to get into the huge gendered part of this conversation, but that's also like a trend that like boys are taught to say they
rich
can do it.
Rich and male. Girls are bravado.
Girls are taught to say, oh, I'm not sure if I can do it, but I really want to try to be perfect, so I won't say I can until I am. And then oopsie doopsie girl didn't get the job.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
Yeah. That's the first time oopsie doopsie has been said on the show. So Brandon, this is the Brandon question. Fuck, marry, kill. This is the only time I've ever heard you say, could you repeat that question, please?
I fucking hate this part of the show. Why does it always start at me?
Because Eric, you once asked for it to be repeated.
Yeah, yeah. No.
You I'll never know what's being talked about.
I got to figure it out.
All right. Eric, you're the master of this. Why they always start with me is like ridiculous. They should just start with you. You're so
you
good at this.
You haven't even let him say what
By
your
the way,
choices are today.
We are taking a steer here. What do we call this round table, you know? Daily based? No, what do we call it?
The weekly based.
The weekly based is taking a pizza turn now. So now we're going to go through a series of pizza questions.
Well, we're on trend here. We have three great pizza chefs.
Roberta's, we have Marta, and we have Barano. Three places, each with their own particular pizza style.
Please do not fuck, marry, kill the three of us. Yeah. This is going to be horrifying.
There was a brief conversation about
Brandon,
going that route.
Brandon, you might find a little red dot right on your... So, fuck, marry, kill. Pizza dough, a cheese, and a sauce.
Oh, so delicious. The pizza is so fantastic. It's like my favorite. But if, you know, if there's something that I'm like so passionate about that I want to fuck it, you know, it's got to be the cheese. You know, just I want to rub it all over me, you know.
The water cheese? Water mozzarella from Al's?
Mozzarella? Yeah, there you go.
Dirty water cheese.
Ooh.
Mm. We're really upping the game here.
Oh. Burrata,
I'm putting
whatever.
That on my pizza.
we gotta kill the pizza dough somehow because it's like the
marry
carbs
pizza
or
dough.
Whatever,
it's
you know?
Bread, it's like, baby.
But then you have
the
no
empty
pizza
calories. Well, see, that's the thing. Somehow we gotta figure out just to narrow it down to the sauce and the cheese because you can't get rid of the cheese, and there's nothing really wrong with the sauce because
this is,
you know,
coming from the person who doesn't make pizza. See,
because
I get that, I understand,
opinion.
I understand that, I get that, but probably the three of us will probably go the same way on this. I mean, you obviously marry the dough.
Yes.
This is like the thing that like you spend so much time like.
Can you hang up the phone?
It's a relationship.
Engineer, cut Eric
what
off.
You do with your dough is a relationship, good or bad. You're in a relationship.
It's a marriage.
With the dough. And then
it's alive.
I would probably go. I would have to fuck the cheese as well. It just seems cozier and probably a better date. But sauce is also, you know, this is like something that like adds freshness, and this is really kind of the core to what good pizza is how this sauce right. is. But I'm gonna have to kill it because it is. I guess it's just not a necessity, really.
I
see what you're saying.
I'm fully with you on the dough, and I'm fully against you on the sauce, which super controversial has me killing cheese, which is like, I don't even know how I got there, but.
Shocking.
I know, but like at the same time, a marinara pizza, that's fucking satisfying. Like I love a marinara pizza, yeah. And that's bread and sauce. So like I'll fucking marry them all day, and then cheese is gone. Cause
so that's your perspective
within,
on this?
Within the realm of pizza, that's the way I answer.
So you won't apply this to all things?
I can't apply this to
how you
all
raise
things.
Your kid, where cheese. You go on vacation.
I can't apply cheese to how I raise my kid because he pretty much eats at every meal, and how I go on vacation is picking who's got the best cheese. So that's definitely not applied.
Al, are you marrying the dough? You had a little bit of a... I thought you agreed.
When I was back and forth for a little bit, right? I could really fuck the dough, but you want to marry it. Why do I want to fuck the dough, right? I want to fuck the dough because it's such a temperamental bitch, right? It took me, like, I'm going to call it like it is, right? Should I use commercial yeast? Should I make my own yeast? So finally, like we were talking the other day when you were at my restaurant, like I was done with commercial yeast. Do I use fresh? Do I use dry? Pastry chefs tell me dry. Pizza guys tell me wet. So I was like, you know what? Fuck that, making my own. Finally did it this year. It's 4 months old. I had a birthday for it. We had a cake. So it's 4 months old, and they keep fucking killing my starter, all right? So I like even if there's a little bit left in the bowl, I'll restart it with whatever's in the bowl. And it actually comes back. So now it's been 4 months, no commercial yeast. But you still, there's no pizza without dough. Let's just call it like it is. It's not a pizza. You don't use dough, it's not pizza. Cheese, fucking kill it. I mean, I've had so many more satisfying pizzas without cheese, especially, I mean...
The seafood ones, right? None of those have cheese.
No, I wouldn't, but I mean...
They can.
You can. You know what? Fuck that, too.
They can. I mean,
clearly, Al's not a clam.
You're not supposed to put... That's not Italian, though.
No, fuck cheese.
To
fuck
put
not
cheese with
pizza. Cheese.
See, I looked at this differently. I looked at, like, fucking cheese. Like, I was more into fucking cheese.
Swiss cheese?
I don't know. I mean, it's like soft and warm. I mean, like burrata. I don't know. Just
like literally.
Yeah. Oh, all right. See, this is where this game always gets me. Because then I'm just like, wait, we're not taking this literally. Like I'm not actually fucking this thing, right?
No, I'm thinking.
See,
like,
I'm so confused whenever we do this.
I actually was gonna. I would fuck, marry, and kill the dough. I love dough so much, and then I would just want to be with it all the time. It's like the dough, absolutely. And then I would spend so much time with it, I would hate it, so I would kill it too. So all three dough.
So you're like wrapping yourself bread. Into like a dateline, like
yeah.
it's like
yeah, exactly.
married to the dough.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. No, but can you do that? I didn't know you could do that in this game.
Bread is so good. Cesare, last time I talked to him, he was like, bread. I love it. I'm like, yes, me too. That's why we're like 15 pounds overweight. That's why this is a radio station, not a TV station.
Did you say 15?
Al, so you said that you don't really abide by the fish and meat.
The cheese rule.
The cheese and fish not mingling. You don't abide by that rule.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't care. It depends. Like, I break all the fucking rules in Italian food. I really do. For me, it's about flavor. I've got to travel a lot in my life, you know, from Thailand to Moscow to wherever, weird places. And for me, it's about flavor, being happy. You can't do that. Well, fuck you. I was a horrible student. You tell me something, I wouldn't listen. The chef, I used to get yelled at all the time for wearing hats, for not wearing hats. I hated wearing hats. I used to fucking string it on the ceiling and, like, stand under it. And
very French.
Yeah. And basically, for me, it's like, does it work? Find out if it works. After 20, almost 30 years now of cooking, understand your food. If a little cheese helps it, if you're using cheese as salt and not to cover it up, why not? This calamari, like, I get it. It's too powerful for seafood. No, it's not. I've tasted some seafood that's so powerful. It needs something else. And if you could balance it right, why not?
It is funny that shrimp I do like and octopus on pizza, but shrimp is huge. It's almost considered a meat. Like when you see Applebee's and all these fast food ads, you'll see we got steak, we got chicken, we got, you know, pork chops and shrimp. Like shrimp is at that
level.
Have
you seen how big their shrimps are?
Yeah, they're
tight. Crazy. It's like a steak. They like actually, there's like they fillet it. They like, well, you know.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, fish though is a man, fish and cheese. I always heard you're not supposed to do that.
So,
and you're not supposed to put cheese grated on a pasta with fish on it.
Right, but Al's point
all of those
was
rules. It's yep. Like even within Italian cuisine, you're gonna have one person in one town who tells you that these are the right rules and you have to follow them, and then you're gonna go one town over, and the grandma next door is like, that bitch, she doesn't know.
So here's my question. Which grandma said that Detroit-style pizza was a thing?
I don't know that grandma.
Yeah, don't know that. No. I mean, you guys are both more in the Neapolitan type realm.
What do we mean here by a thing? Like, it's like on the Enquirer?
No, like
it's dating, it's dating Rebecca Romaine Stamos?
No,
like what kind of thing is it?
There's Detroit-style pizza. There's St. Louis-style pizza. There's like...
Domino's?
New Jersey Star Tavern, hey, bar pizza.
Here's the thing. Yeah. When you have a food that's so widely popular as it is, everyone's going to try to get their piece of it. You have every type of pizza. You have like gluten-free pizza. You have vegetarian pizza. You have vegan pizza. You have Detroit pizza. You have New York pizza. Like the list goes on. Rhode Island. Yes, this is true.
Oh, yeah.
But when you have something that's this widely popular and can generate the type of revenues it can, people are going to grab it and try to make it their own. Tell me you haven't eaten a bagel pizza.
Of course I have.
Love it.
Matzah pizza too. Yep. What is Rhode Island style, Lena?
It's grilled.
Oh.
It's like, is that based on Al Forno?
I think
the restaurant in Providence.
Providence. Yeah. Likely. That's first place I had wood-fired pizza, I believe.
So I grew up in Chicago, and comically, I thought I hated pizza as a kid. Again, my parents
they really ruined you.
They ate to live. They didn't live to eat, you know? So, like, the food that they would get, they would order pizza, but it was, like, shitty cardboard crust and, like, a slab of mozzarella that wasn't melted through and, like, some janky sauce on top. Not appetizing at all. And I'd be like, I'll have a grilled chicken sandwich, please. I was, like, 10. Then I grew up, and I was like, oh, Chicago-style pizza is actually delicious. So, like, Lou Malnati's, I still love that. Like, my husband shipped me a heart-shaped Lou Malnati's pizza for Valentine's Day, and it's to this day, like, one of the best things I've ever received.
So you're a deep dish girl.
Well, it's two different food groups. Like, I love Roman pizza. I studied abroad in Rome. I now cook Roman-style pizza, like the cracker-thin crust. But, like, I can't compare that in Chicago-style pizza and pretend like I like one more than another. They satisfy two different cravings.
All right. So on that note,
yeah.
Describe.
I fully agree with this, though, too. There's a place for every style of pizza to just be like this versus this.
So I mean, what you do you think? Do Domino's,
you could do
Papa
it. I could
John's.
Rate it. But also, like, if you ask me these questions next year, I may have a slightly different answer because you like they come in, they come out. It's like pizza
is delicious.
Well,
what about fast food pizza like Pizza Hut? Those are still yummy, right?
Yeah, they are. I don't really eat them very often, but I have rarely found a pizza where I've been like,
do we
like,
eat pizza out?
Out of my mouth?
Not possible.
Do we eat pizza out?
Like out?
Outside of Roberta's? Do you
or
go
outside?
Around?
Outside.
Outside. Like, do you go to other places and you order
school
pizza?
Pizza slices with
pizza.
His kids, right?
I eat pizza still so much. I probably eat pizza. We eat pizza like 3 times a week.
I used to eat the little round ones you used to get in school. You remember those?
Yeah.
Like they're like cardboard and crunchy, but the little, I mean.
Home run in, is that it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, for me, pizza, it creates a need. It should have its own food groups. I mean, there's so many, and it's just so satisfying. How many different burgers have you ate, right? Yeah, burger's a burger, but a pizza is completely different, no matter where you go, no matter where you land, and stick it in your mouth.
So describe your perfect slice. Just say it. No
doesn't
qualifiers.
Have to be a slice.
I'll start.
Perfect pizza.
Black olive and ground pork. I love. I think olive and ground pork go well, and I like onion on all things too. So onion, black olive. And it has to be a tomato sauce. People, when they get their one pizza, I mean, I do think it should have a sauce. That's the signature.
If I'm only gonna have one pie, I do want it to have a tomato sauce. If I'm going, you know, we're sharing. We're a whole group.
Marinara,
we're gonna order a bunch. I'm cool with there being one white pizza.
Okay. Just one.
But it doesn't have to be an slice. Ingredient. It you can just be have to your, ingredients. Your perfect pizza. Your toppings, one the slice. Style.
I mean, if I'm going one perfect pizza, uh-huh. it's just a margarita.
Okay.
It's just classic because if I only get one, then that's what I'm doing.
But like the Roberta's, I think your dough and pizza style benefits from a topping.
But you guys have asked me this before, and I always say the margarita as well. It's like
that's hard my answer
to,
too.
It's hard to like not choose that one if there's one.
Okay, is your famous original better than your margarita?
I mean, I can't say that. No, okay. I would probably choose that right now if I went in there. I'd probably get a famous original. It's just a little saltier and has a little bit more going on. But if you really put the pressure to me to choose one, I'm gonna go margarita almost every single time.
Chef?
It's just different. It's just the right. It is what pizza is.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I could get down with that, but there's for me. One of the biggest influences in my career has been in Thailand. Changed my game completely. So normally I would say margarita because that's how you know what they're doing, what they're like creating. But for me, I want something sweet. I want something heat. I want something salty. So, I mean, I think your bee sting is a good example. You get the saltiness. You get a little bit of heat from the honey.
That's local honey, right? Those bees populate the BQE.
You
and
saw them on your
Park.
Commute this morning.
Yeah, actually, I keep them in my Volkswagen bus.
Oh, that's cleaner, actually.
But so. Yeah, I mean,
all right.
Yeah, I mean,
Beastmaster. I like what he's saying. Also, is the Beastmaster where you get sweet, salty, all that.
I would kill that pizza. And like, I know we make it here, but that pizza has just way too much going on for me.
No, it's still good.
I really like the basics. I think this goes back to the conversation, the fuck, marry, kill conversation. I want those core things to be the things I taste if I'm just having one slice. I want it to be like the freshest, like most delicious mozzarella. I want like fresh tomato, like just fresh tomato. And I want the like crust to be like to just like have that like doughy bite to it. That like,
I'm glad you said
quality.
Crust because not one of you has said what style. Are you gonna be true? Are you gonna be true to Marta? And are you gonna have Roman style? Are you gonna be true to closer to a Neapolitan? Like,
so this is my biggest conundrum. So even within Rome, there's tonda pizza, which is what we make, like a flat cracker crust, and then there's also pizza al taglio, which is like most similar to like a, you know, focaccia-y kind of style pizza bianca. And so if it was al taglio, I'd go just spicy tomato, no cheese, just spicy tomato on bread, delicious. And if it was Marta style, then I'd go margarita. But like, it depends, because I wouldn't even need the cheese for my last.
God, you've been bashing cheese. You know my wife's a cheesemonger.
I love cheese. Don't get me wrong, but when it's the only, when it's like the last one ever, like. It's different.
So you guys have both, all of you, have launched new projects or duplications or similar businesses in the last year or so. Al, you're opening a wine shop. Lena, you guys have opened Vini e Fritti and Cafe Marchio. Roberta's is always expanding. How hard is it to duplicate your team as you guys expand and launch new projects?
Well, I have a 3D printer, so...
You've just been duplicating yourself?
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing process. Eric, I should let you
yourself?
Borrow this. You can have thousands of newspaper delivery boys that look exactly like me. Could be an amazing
Fantastic.
Thing for Alameda.
We need that technology, definitely.
So what about, duplicating team? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Can you duplicate your team? I mean, can you, if you have one great team at your place, can you guarantee that if it's happening in Houston or next door to you or at the other end of the hotel?
I think for me, it comes down to recipe, just putting everything on paper. You know, the first recipe I wrote was because one of my pastry chefs says you're crazy for not writing your recipes down. And this was when I was young and I thought I could do everything myself. And then you realize that's so far from the truth. And basically, I have like a binder that's at least 4 inches thick of everything I've ever done. So it's always go to there. And hopefully you build a strong team enough that you can take one or two people that were with you from day one and kind of disperse them and have them trained down. Because the more you do, the harder it is. It's just, it gets very complicated, especially when you're trying to play on a high level.
Yeah, I would say, as much as I agree that having things documented in recipes are clutch to me, it's less about that, because no matter how well I document it, there's room for interpretation. And like someone right off the street, if I put them in and said, do this, they don't know my aesthetic. They don't know how I think about food. They just don't, they're not in my head yet. And so for me, it's way more about getting people and creating a culture in your restaurant that makes people want to stay, because let's be honest, the market is that there's really high turnover in our industry. So like you have to train people up, keep them engaged, give them opportunity for growth. So you almost have to expand to give them opportunity for growth, but you have to temper their want to grow until they've understood enough that they're ready to go and own something. So like until you feel like I could look away and they could do it on their own, you have to kind of just keep on investing in them and investing in them until they're able to take it and you know that you can like sign your name on it and they've got it.
Speaking of expansion, what are the ascending and descending neighborhoods for restaurants?
One second, I'm going to get back to this, though, because I would say duplication, maybe not the right word. I think really what you're trying to do is emulate most of the times. You're trying to take a team and you're trying to say, hey, look, this is how we do it. And it comes back to this culture thing. You're trying to build a culture. And then you're trying to say, hey, look over here. This is where we're doing it right. So really you want that team to emulate what's already working for you. To try to duplicate something is almost futile. And I think you're probably going to fail if your intention is to duplicate. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is you want to create a team who can do similar things, but you have to work to their strengths. So you create a culture that's this is how things are done, and then you form multiple teams, and those teams all have their own dynamic. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to duplicate them, you're probably not, it's not going to work.
Yeah, but it's why the word authenticity is a stupid word.
It's like in basketball, it's like you're not going to duplicate the Golden State Warriors, but you may be able to look at the Golden State Warriors and emulate what they do and become a better basketball team.
It's actually the best way of expansion is to have under the Roberta's name or under a company name, charmingly inconsistent or, you know, a little bit divergent teams, you know, because if it was all one thing, then you'd be McDonald's. And by the way, that's one thing I do like about Shake Shack. They don't buy all their meat all around the country from one place. You know, they buy it from. So there are charming inconsistencies in even a fast food concept. So, all right. Well, we're behind schedule, so we're going to have to make the interview part of the show around Robin format where they just answer quick. But I do want to know, what is the top story on the Alameda Sun today?
Well, Patrick, I'm very excited because my story is getting picked up by the national publication called Auto Body News.
Oh,
and it's
going
to be carried nationwide to this because a local body shop restored this car completely on its own dime and then donated it to a local Coast Guard family that was in need. And it was kind of a community effort because the parts dealers chipped in, all the worker bees at the auto body shop gave their time, and the insurance company gave the car, which was considered totaled, and a year's worth of insurance to this family, totally scot-free. Oh, and plus the trunk was filled with toys donated to their kids. So it was a really nice feel-good story, and this national outfit decided to that they want to reprint it, and it's my story. So
good,
I'm
congratulations, Mazel Tov.
That's awesome.
Thanks for talking about something in the news that's not depressing.
I know that was nice. The toys was really when my heart warmed. I thought that would made it super nice story. That's good. So was that the cover story today, or no? That was in the previous
issue.
Well,
it was below the fold. You know, the other stuff is like of was more the local interest,
or the upsetting things going on in the world.
Below the fold is an article. Exactly. Eric, very excited that article picked up. Should we just go to the interview, or
skip the commercial?
No, I think we have to take a quick 20-second break.
That's how we get paid.
Stick around, we'll be right back for the main course.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world."
thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Korsha Wilson, and I'm the host of A Hungry Society here on HRN. A Hungry Society focuses on highlighting dope people doing amazing work in food, and we talk about how we can make the culinary world a more diverse and inclusive space. You can join the conversation by checking out A Hungry Society wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, and we're back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are live in studio with Lena Ciardullo from Marta and Aldi. I've been calling you Aldi Melio, but it's Meglio.
No, you nailed it.
All right, Aldi Melio from Burano. Yeah. Awesome. So, Lena, we were talking about transitioning and growing your teams. How do you grow and do your own thing while still being respectful to your predecessors, Joe and Nick, and to Danny Meyer with his vision?
I mean, you have to hope that... So I've worked for Union Square Hospitality Group for 10 years. I've worked for Joe and Nick since I was a line cook. So the things that I care about are pretty much in line with the things that they care about just on their own. That's just the way it is. And then... like, I don't have to worry about being true to Joe or Nick's vision when they open Marta, because I was a sous chef who was trying to prove my own when I started at Marta. Everything that I've created and put on that menu, it wasn't like I was holding back because I wasn't the executive chef yet. So a lot of the menu was already my menu items when my name landed on it. And it's very easy to be respectful to their vision, because in a lot of ways they were my mentors and they taught me a lot about it. And as mentors, they're, you know, good people who care about me being able to grow and push the envelope, and they know that that's what keeps something current. So when I do want to try something or do something that wasn't existing before, I think that they're going to be supportive of it, because it's like, oh, wow, good. Someone who's got a new take on something, someone who's got a new look, because that's the only thing that's going to keep us fresh in a, you know, in an industry where a 5-year-old restaurant is a very dangerous thing to be, and that's what we are right now. So if we're not coming up with new and inventive ideas and new spins on things, then we're going to be extinct.
So speaking of, what rules have you broken within your niche? Or are you, it doesn't sound like you're a rule follower.
I could go either way. I mean, there are rules to be followed and there are rules to challenge, I think, along the way. So like, from as stupid little things as you don't put cheese with, you know, seafood. Well, we have a clam casino pie that's got a bunch of fontina on it, or provolone on it. And it's fucking delicious. Like, it's one of my favorite pizzas we do. So broke that rule. Feel really good about it.
Al, do you have a number one rule you've broken?
No, everything. For me, it's if it feels right, do it. If it feels wrong, don't do it. And it's kind of what we teach our cooks, right? When you're doing something and you feel it's completely wrong, well, why the fuck are you still doing it? Or if you're doing something and you're like really proud of it, and which can be completely wrong too, somebody's there, they're like,
why aren't you doing more of it?
Right. I mean, yeah.
So how do you define your menu?
So it's been a struggle. We've opened 3 years, and I was trying to figure out. For me, it's like a new Italian-American, right? So if an Italian came to Williamsburg and lived there for a few years and understood culture and understood what people want to eat, and that's kind of what I am. I mean... my partners, we were talking about putting a cacio pepe on the menu, right? And I was so against putting a cacio pepe on the menu, not because it's bad. I love it. I'll eat it 9 times out of 10. But I wanted it to be a reason you could come to my restaurant. So I did a saffron gili, which is saffron-infused water, put it inside the pasta. And then I did a pecorino. I did a Calabrian honey. I put a little saffron in there, too, and I finished with black pepper. So there's your fix, but it's completely different. You know, It's weird, but it's fun and it's comforting.
And it follows in your family tradition. It's another dirty water.
Dirty water. Go with it.
And you just opened a wine shop next door, Spirit Animal.
That's
what is your spirit animal?
I joke. It's platypus.
Platypus.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a hard thing. For us, why we opened Spirit Animal was to cope at a restaurant, so we have better access to booze now.
Partially.
No, but we had a space which was next door, and a lot of people would come in and ask us, you know, how do you get your wine? And, you know, we kind of source our wines like we source our products. You know, it all starts with the farming. Like, how's the farming practices? Is it sustainable? Are you doing this something that's going to be a long time? Are you not putting pesticides? Are you organic? Organic and natural wine doesn't mean great wine. It means somebody's trying to do something right. And sometimes they fall and make mistakes. But 9 times out of 10, it's really good juice. And we wanted to do something for the neighborhood as well that kind of went hand in hand with our restaurant. And we also wanted to do a wine shop that was into training. So we're going to do a lot of classes in the restaurant, in the wine shop, and be able to teach and get people to understand what we are selling rather than you just go into a wine shop. What do you want? What do you drink?
It's a really cool setup. You guys have to see it. They designed a bar so that, like, if they're doing a tasting, you're really, like, saddling up to the bar. And it makes you want to, like, throw a party in there. And it's really, like, bright and airy and well laid out, but it's exciting. And is the neighborhood ready for it?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, we have bottles open all the time, so if you pop in, nine times out of ten, there's a little juice for you to get happy.
And I think this is the future of wine sales, because I think you're starting to see people strip away the intimidation factor of wine, because it doesn't have to be this this thing that makes you feel stupid. Like, also, it's just so simple to enjoy wine if there's somebody that's willing to, like, show you and not pretentiously, like, look over you and be like, you know nothing, I know everything. It's just, right. This is where hand-holding and teaching is, like, an element that is, like, really, really important, because I think most people, casual wine drinkers, are petrified of the wine shop because they just feel like they're going to make the wrong decision.
Or that always. Someone's judging me, yeah. Like, yeah. I've picked up, I went too cheap, or I didn't pick the best one.
I just go for a region. If it's French, I'm like, I want a Bandol, and inevitably that gets me props. Or I'm like, I always want Barbaresco.
But how do you go out of your region? How do you learn?
I don't want to learn. I want a good wine.
But I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, so you're just buying old shit that you know.
The oldest, overpriced shit I can buy.
Yeah, and it's like, there's a new world of wine that exist.
Nah, I don't want orange wine. Some newcomer. Okay. I don't want innovation. I want classics.
Orange wine aside, there's also a lot of traditional wines that you pop probably by. Like, I'm not a huge Chardonnay fan, but like, if you're into natural wine and you know what's happening in France, there's some like truly mind-blowing Chardonnays that exist out there. But because, I don't know, my idea of Chardonnay, I wouldn't walk in and be like, give me the best Chardonnay. I would know that it would probably not be what I like.
I'm happy to be ignorant of certain things. Right. I like to go deep into a culture, and through repetition, you get great observation about that thing. Or if they don't have Barbaresco kind of thing, then I go Valtellina. And I'm like, and then if they don't have those or a good one, they'll recommend something.
Then you switch
to
sake. Then you get lost.
Then I go to a Japanese restaurant.
Can you tell them, I want a wine that tastes like this?
Yes, I would do that.
That's, I think, the most important thing that's educational.
But that way you're giving two opinions of something you like versus being like, just give me the sampler. You know, like, I don't want that. I want them to know exactly something I like. So I pick on one, and from there you grow versus, like, someone who might not have the most experience being like, try this because the bottle's still open or because I personally went to the vineyard and liked it.
Here's the thing, though. We do a lot of these wine classes. We do wine classes here constantly, open to the public. The thing is you, if you tell somebody, I like this and this is why I like this, they can show you a whole world of new things that you probably will like. And
if I trust them, yes, like Max Quattrone, right, who was, when he said, try this, I would go with them. Or when it's a great cocktail guy I know, I'm like, you just give me a gin drink that I like. But when you don't know, I like going in with an opinion because it sets you.
But I think starting a relationship is very important, especially in a restaurant or a wine shop. If you walk in and you tell me you want a Bandol or a Barbaresco and I hit you up for 80, 90 bucks, you're like, yeah, fuck you, man. But if I give you something that's like 45 bucks and you go home and you're like, this is amazing, you'll come back and you trust me. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with restaurants. I've been 9 out of 10. I'd be like, oh, well, I like this and I like that. And then they bring you up to 150 bucks. And I'm like, I'm an idiot, so I'll buy it just to say, okay, you know what, big shot, let me see what it's about. But then I'm like, well, was it worth $150? Mm-hmm. So I think if you make the relationship, you'll get the loyal customers. Because at the end of the day, without them, we're nothing.
And what you've created now is value. Like, you're a value customer, and you're also, you're getting value out of the vendor itself.
Yep.
And let's be honest, when you're talking about wine, people are going to price the ones that they know that everyone wants to buy higher, because people are going to buy them anyway. Where you're going to find value on a list is something new and interesting and engaging that, like, if you're willing to trust in them, maybe you're going to be able to try something new and find value and learn another, you know, region or producer or whatever that you really like. That's something that we employ a lot at our places, is like, we want to have our wine list be extraordinarily value driven. So that when people come in, they want to come back and they want to, like, try whatever is a new thing, because you've built that trust.
Right. Cool. Well, this has been a great show.
Thank you guys for coming.
You guys are always welcome back.
Lena, you have your pizza duels going on this summer at Marta. Are we going to... Is anyone in this room getting an invite? Al, Brandon?
I mean, so this year is already set up, but there's always next year. And I mean that seriously, because I hope that this dueling pizza series never dies. So it's going strong. We've got 6 coming up this summer. So we got a lot of programming going on within the building. But
awesome.
I was watching an ABC special about the Jeffersons and All in the Family yesterday. It was a tribute to them with Jimmy Kimmel and stuff, Will Ferrell. And essentially, Eric is like the Jeffersons. Eventually, he's going to spin off as on his own show, and it's going to be sad when he's not on our show anymore. But I'm really happy that the Jeffersons and All in the Family are still united right now. Eric is still with us.
Eric is still with us, yes.
All right, thank you guys for a great show. Stick around. Yep. Up next, I believe, is A Taste of the Past, and we will see you guys next week. Sweet. Have a great Memorial Day.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the food world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.